In politics today, timing is everything, and timing also is what leads to conspiracy theories. So when Narcotics Control Bureau summoned Deepika Padukone and I think one more actor, Akulpreet, pardon me if I know I'm not so well informed on everybody in the film land, immediate conspiracy theory was that this was done to take the headlines away on a day when farmers will be protesting across the country against the new farm reform bills, which, as you know, I support. Having said that, whether it's a coincidence or it's a conspiracy, it really doesn't matter, because even the issue of these film actors, all of them are women. For some reason, looks like men live on testosterone. They don't need to smoke, drink, eat anything that is not illegal. So they are being summoned. It's an important event, because this has got us all to focus on our narcotics laws. And this has also got us all to focus on whether they are working well or not. Also, it's fascinating to understand where they come from. So I've asked two of my colleagues for help, both young, Apurva Mandhani, who follows the laws, and Ananya Bhardwaj, who covers NCB besides other law enforcement, intelligence agencies, Ministry of Home, etc., etc., etc. So, first of all, I refer you to an article that coincidentally we published just yesterday on the print.in, and you should see that article. I'll share it with you, by two scholars at Vidhi. Vidhi is a wonderful NGO, a research organization in Delhi that looks at the laws. Now, Vidhi Legal, as we call it in short, two scholars from there, or Vidhi Center for Legal Policy, two scholars, Neha Singhal and Naveed Ahmed, they wrote this article, which we published yesterday. Now, this article has some very interesting data. This article tells you, for example, that in 2018, 81,778 people in India were charged under this law called NDPS, that is Narcotic Drugs and Psychotropic Substances Act. Of these, and this is important, of these, 59%, that's 59 out of 100, that's a majority, large majority, were arrested for being in possession of drugs for their personal use. They were not vendors, they were not peddlers, they were not smugglers. They were just having mostly small quantities for their personal use. Then they also studied the magistrate's courts in Bombay or Mumbai. Now, Mumbai has the largest number of drug cases in the country. There they found 10,669 cases in the magistrate's courts in Mumbai, of which, just watch this, 99.9% were cases of personal consumption. Only 0.01, that is 1 in 1,000, right, were a case of somebody who is a peddler, who is a distributor, who is a seller, who is a smuggler. 99.9%, that means 999 out of 1,000 were tried for personally consuming the drugs. And then as they go on to see, they see most of these people are daily wage workers or street dwellers or slum dwellers. So this law especially targets the poor, because they get caught for having 20 grams of hash in their pockets or smoking something that looks funny on the street, etc., etc., whereas the big guys get away. Now, two questions arise. One, you say, then if big guys are now being caught by NCB and others, isn't that a good idea? It would be in principle, if again they were catching peddlers, sellers, smugglers, financiers. But if big guys are again being caught for personal consumption, then the difference is not that much. And in some cases, personal consumption, not now, but sometime back in the past, and with no recoveries on them, barring one, but I'll mention that to you, but no real recoveries of drugs from them. Then the same research also goes on to tell us that 87% of these cases, 87% of these cases in Mumbai, of this 10,669 cases involved cannabis. So hash, charas, not hard drugs. Hard drugs are cocaine, heroin, smack. No, this was cannabis. And as you know, there is a global debate now on cannabis. Should cannabis be legalized or not? In some states of America, it's being done. In Europe, this is now floating. That criminalizing cannabis has, one, driven a lot more people into jail and the legal system, and it has criminalized a lot more poor people. It has also targeted specifically a lot of poor people with these tough laws. In America, this is seen very much in race terms. Now, data for India is not available, but in America, the data tells you, and that's what this Vidhi legal study tells us, in America, the data tells us that the cost of rehabilitating these people who might be addicts or who might be doing drugs, particularly drugs like cannabis, the cost of rehabilitating them is very small compared to the cost of prosecution and jailing them. So the cost of prosecution and jailing them could be 6 times more than the cost of rehabilitating them. And you know what happens? You send a drug addict to jail. All our jails are infested with drugs, particularly cannabis. And so our jails also become centers of drug peddlers, and the system also gets corrupted. Then if you look at this data, and you also look at a study, the National Survey on Extent and Pattern of Substance Abuse in India. This is a 2019 study conducted by the Ministry of Social Justice and Empowerment. This tells you that in India, at least 3 crore people are using cannabis. Now, if you start locking them up in jail, that will be 3 crore. It will completely break your legal system. As such, there are too many people on drug charges in our jails. And as you know, 99%, 97% to 99% on personal drug consumption charges. So this will be a disaster. So something has to be done about cannabis. That debate is on. That debate is on in America. That debate is on in Europe. And that debate, it does come up in India, but has to come up more strongly because 3 crore Indians use cannabis in one way or the other. And frankly, cannabis is much too easily available because it also grows wild. So you see it growing wild. You want to see where it grows wild. I'm sure in most of your neighborhoods in semi-rural India, you can find it. But if you go to Manali, for example, it grows wild. I'm not asking you to go there and do hash. I'm just telling you that how do you control something and how do you criminalize something that is so openly and easily available and which is so easy to do. If you look at other data, drug data in India, drug use, 3 crores do cannabis. This government report says 60 lakhs have opioid disorders. Now, opioid disorders is something which is a big deal right now in America because opioids can be legal and they can be illegal. Now, there are lots of morphine-based drugs, particularly pain-killing drugs. There are drugs in India which happily sell over the counter. There are also anti-diarrheals which use opium derivatives. But people can get dependent on them or addicted to them in the course of time. And there's also opium and other opiates which are illegal in a country like India. So about 60 lakh people have opiate disorders in India. So 3 crore cannabis, 60 lakh opiate. Now, people pushing drugs into them, that is people who inject drugs into them, which is the most sort of visible picture of a drug addict for you, that is only 8.5 lakhs. Now, if you took your attention away from people who consume a little bit of cannabis themselves and focused on people who are injecting, because that is much more damaging, because you do it once, you are addicted to life, de-addicting them is much tougher. If the law and order system focused on them, maybe you will get much more bang for the buck, much more value. Sorry, it's an unfortunate metaphor, but much more value for your effort, for your judicial time, for your police time, etc., etc. So these are the lessons you learn looking at the larger data. In fact, this data doesn't even feature cocaine and the rest because obviously those drugs are so expensive that essentially very few people can afford those drugs. So once again, forget what you saw in Urta, Punjab. All of Punjab is not doing cocaine. In fact, all of Punjab is not doing heroin either. people find cheaper drugs, and a lot of the intoxicants that are now being used are actually either prescription drugs that people misuse. In fact, you will find in states which have more of the nasha problem, you will find the sales of cough syrups are much higher, and you will find lots of local brand, funny branded cough syrups which actually put a lot of pseudoephedrine in them. So you have one and go ton, and you find people buying these bottles of cough syrup and drinking all of it. You go to India Gate, the boat club in Delhi. I have recorded many episodes of Walk the Talk there. You watch on the side lots of young children, in fact, young children, teenagers, who are sniffing at something and looking high. So when you go closer, as I've done a couple of times, and check what they are doing, they are not doing cocaine. What they are doing is, because that's an area next to so many government offices, they are getting eraser fluid. When somebody types something, then you want to erase what's been typed, you use a fluid. That fluid has spirit or something that gives people a high. So even eraser fluid is a source of a high. So if you start locking up everybody in jail like that, it is not practical. Second, if you start presuming, say in a state like Punjab or any other state like that, that the picture is like Urta Punjab, that everybody is snorting. No, that's not true. And that's why this data also tells you that hard drugs is less of a problem in India. It is the softer drugs. I don't know what is hard, what is soft, but that is the definition. That is a bigger problem on the legal system. So maybe you have to look at this illegality or illegalizing this a little bit differently. Now, we also have to understand, where did these laws come from? So 1857, important year. That was the year of the first Indian War of Independence, or what the British call, or what the Anglophiles call, the Great Sepoy Mutiny. I disagree. In that year, the British passed the Opium Act of 1857. Now, I will not take you too deep into that history. You know how the British and also the French were using opium at that time. It was used as a weapon of mass destruction, distraction, money making. And that is when the history of opium wars, etc., with China comes in. So the British wanted India to grow more opium so they could export it to China. The Chinese were trying to prevent it. So the British and the French were going to war with them. So 1857 Act was mainly to regulate who will grow opium, how much opium. India is one of the largest growers of opium in the world for medicinal purposes. You want to see where it is in many parts of India. In fact, I wrote a story in India Today magazine many years ago from Mandsaur in Madhya Pradesh and parts of Rajasthan also, on how this opium is cultivated, because it's done with a license and there are inspectors who keep an eye on how much you're producing, who's buying, etc., etc., etc. That having said, in 1878, the British again changed this law. It became the new Opium Act of 1878. 1930, they came with a third law that was called Dangerous Drugs Act. And then it stayed like that. But in 1961, something important happened internationally. By late 50s, early 60s, as we know, hard drugs were coming in. That's, you know, LSD, etc., etc. The 60s were the decade of all that heavy stuff and Beatlemania and psychedelia and everything that happened in the Western world. The hippie culture in India, maybe it came a few years later and reflected in that film Hare Rama Hare Krishna that Devanand made. Now, in 1961, there was a global convention on drug misuse, on the drug menace. It was called the Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs. In that convention, every country, essentially every signatory, which means every country in the world that mattered, signed up that within 25 years they will pass new laws in their country to ensure that drug problem goes away. It is as a result of that that almost exactly 25 years later, in 1985, we in India do everything at the 11th hour. So do I in my life. So I am also Indian. So I'm not blaming anybody. So in 1985, Rajiv Gandhi's government, they passed this Narcotic Drug Psychotropic Substances Act. Now, there is a little bit of a conspiracy theory there also, that this was done heavily under American pressure, particularly the illegalization or criminalization of cannabis was under American pressure. Why? Because Richard Nixon, remember, Richard Nixon's years coincided with the years of Vietnam War protests, Woodstock, Beatlemania, psychedelia, etc., etc., etc. And there was a conservative pushback in the Western world against drugs and against permissive culture. So Richard Nixon had made it his life's mission, the war on drugs. And he was replaced by, he was succeeded briefly by Ford when he had to go away because of Watergate. Then Carter had his one term. And then came in Ronald Reagan. So Republicans, conservatives were back. So 1985, Rajiv Gandhi's government passed this law, which was much too strong. That law actually said that for anybody possessing a substantial amount of these banned drugs, including cannabis, the judge had to give a mandatory death sentence. It was like the drug law is in Singapore now. So judge was left no option. Of course, people will not be hanged just like that. This is not Iran or Saudi Arabia, and forget China, where people can be executed just like that. But that was the law. So in 1988, this law went through its first reform. And that reform then said that, look, substance abuse, punishment, personal use can't be so much, you reduce it. So it was reduced to 1 to 2 years. And then possession and distribution was made a stronger offense. In 1989, funnily, this got strengthened further, again because of international pressure, essentially American pressure. Remember, Ronald Reagan was still there. It was under pressure. It was made like Republicans were there. It was Ronald Reagan, then Bush. So it was made like the offenses were non-bailable now. It also added clauses of forfeiture of property. Mandatory death penalty was confirmed. Special courts for drug offenses for strong punishments for production and financing. In fact, if you look at the debate in Parliament at that time, two honorable MPs pointed at the downside of this, on how this could be misused. And those two were Jayanti Patnaik of Indian National Congress and Kamal Murarka of Janata Dal. Kamal Murarka, who we know very well, who's a very, very smart businessman and a public figure and a politician. So he also pointed out that this could be misused, and it was then misused. In 1994, another committee was set up to see how to stop the exploitation of the law against small town users and peddlers. So that law then determined that it is quantity of the drugs that somebody has that would determine the punishment or the impact of NDPS, of this law. So for 10 years they said that for any large quantity, 10-year sentence, unless proven for self-use. So if you could prove it was self-use, you got away with a much lesser sentence. 2001, one more amendment came once again to soften the harsh sentencing, because this law was too harsh, and it made a distinction between small quantities and commercial quantities. Were you using it for keeping it for yourself, or were you keeping it to be sold, to be smuggled, to be traded, etc., etc.? And then that distinction was drawn. In 2014, yet another amendment came. With that amendment, the mandatory death sentence was taken away. Why was it taken away? Because in 2011, Mumbai High Court, in a good judgment, in a great judgment, read down the mandatory death penalty clause in NDPS and said, this can't be done like that. This cannot be mandatory. So responding to that, a new law was drafted. There was a committee, usual government functioning. There was a committee. It recommended a new law. That law was drafted. Then that law was sent to a parliamentary committee. That took its time. So that started the process in 2010-11. In 2014, March, I think on 10th of March, that law was passed and the mandatory death sentence was taken away. With all these reforms, this is still a very rough law. So you may ask me, under what law has Riya Chakrabarty been arrested? Because no drugs have been found on her, right? She's been arrested based on WhatsApp chats, which allegedly suspect that she was buying these drugs, she and her brother and some others were buying these drugs in the past. Then she's also been arrested for likely consumption of these drugs. No drugs have been recovered from her, but the implication is that these WhatsApp chats of the past are sufficient evidence that she was consuming these drugs or giving these to somebody else. The problem with the law is that the way it's structured, section 3754, the onus of innocence is essentially put on the accused. So other laws say innocent until proven guilty. In this law, guilty until proven innocent. So judge actually makes a presumption of guilt. And also under this law, with many changes, and unfortunately after a very new judgment, 2020 January judgment of the Supreme Court of India, conditions for bail have been made even tougher. So now essentially a judge cannot give bail in these cases unless the judge is convinced that most likely this person is innocent. So if you ask me, why is Riya Chakrabarty not getting bail? Or if you ask the judge would say, look at the last judgment of the Supreme Court of India. Now, what exactly it is that the drug authorities have recovered in these cases, in the Riya Chakrabarty cases, or all the linked cases, because about 15 others have been arrested with her. So they found 59 grams of curated marijuana with one of the dealers, 59 grams of curated marijuana, and two men, Abbas Lakhani and Karan Arora, have been arrested for possessing this. Plus they found a few of some other psychotropic of drugs, but very small. Under the new law, under the modified law as it exists, quantity up to 1 kilo of ganja is considered a small quantity, not a large commercial quantity. The next question you will ask me is, then under what law or for what offense are people like Deepika Padukone, Rakulpreet Singh, and then Sara Ali Khan and Shraddha Kapoor and so many others are being summoned? So remember, they are not being summoned as the accused, at least not yet. They are not being charged with anything. So Section 67 of NDPS, which is a very tough act, it gives the power to any officer who is authorized under the act to summon anybody for evidence, information, etc., 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 if he or she thinks that that person's presence will be important in cracking a case. So there is no case against these people, but they are being summoned as witnesses, as sources, etc., under the powers of the act. Now, before I conclude, I will give you a little more data so we understand what this means. Mandatory death sentence, fantastic. Looks like the law pass, okay. Everybody says mandatory death sentence for rape, hang people in public. These laws are passed to satisfy public opinion at that moment. How are they implemented in real life is a completely different thing. If you look at the mandatory death sentence period with this law, say 2000 to 2015. So there is a study by National Law University, Delhi. It was called Project 39A. That study showed that in those 15 years of mandatory death sentence, only 5 death sentences were awarded by trial courts. And what happened to them? Did they get hanged? Of the 5, 4 got commuted to life sentence at appeal level, and 1 got acquitted by Bombay High Court. So it's not as if you've been hanging people left, right and center. This is not Iran, and this is not Singapore either. And once again, definitely, and thank God for that, this is not China. So before we draft laws, we have to be careful, because if they are not, those laws will be misused. So I'll finish now with some other larger data from Vidhi Legal again. It shows that 97% people in 2017-18 charged and arrested under NDPS were arrested for possession of drugs, not for selling, distributing, smuggling, etc. Of these also, of all the people arrested, 87 were arrested for doing cannabis. That is cannabis, marijuana, charas. Bhang, by the way, is legal in India. In fact, if you go to many parts of UP, notably Varanasi, I can walk you around Varanasi and I can show you many licensed bhang shops there. It's fine. So bhang has not been illegalized and definitely not criminalized in India. So if you look at all this data, you wonder what is this law all about. And now you have this grand distraction going on. Somebody is trying to clean up Bollywood. Retrospectively, we are still crying over Pranab Das retrospective tax amendment. In this case, people are being quote unquote punished for allegedly having done cannabis many years earlier or even talking about it. This is sounding worse than the Saudi law. In fact, time has now come for India. This is the modern time to look at this law very carefully, because the answer to every problem is not to pass a new law. That is what we saw happening with the rape law. And people say rape still goes on because the law itself will not do it. And just because you say you will hang people, if just hanging of people stopped crimes, then Saudi Arabia, Iran, China, etc. will have no crimes at all. But they have a lot of crimes. So that doesn't work. And this reminds me of the words of the great Indian jurist Nani Palkiwala, who said that, look, in our country, we think the moment we have a problem, let's pass a law. And the moment we pass a law, the problem will go away. It doesn't go away. In fact, not just the problem doesn't go away, your legal system and criminal system is then buried under the burden of one more law. So when we talked about labor reform, agriculture reform, particularly labor reform, we talked about a lot of faltu laws, which will now be subsumed into four laws. Similarly, there are too many other laws floating in the system and too many laws which do not serve much useful purpose, but which can be freely misused. I can tell you from my experience as a reporter, all over North India, Punjab, Haryana, Uttar Pradesh, police stations routinely keep a supply of marijuana, of charas with them, which means catch somebody, put a kilo of charas in his car, catch somebody, kill the person in a fake encounter, put a kilo of charas on his body. So these are also things which are misused. So I thought we've talked about farmers and other issues, but this was an important issue for us to talk about. And you know what? Some of you must be wondering, what is this column of smoke rising from my side? Now, don't think I'm smoking something illegal. Frankly, I've never smoked anything legal either. My father was a chain smoker, so I think he did the smoking for all of us. What I've got is, but smoke is just a poor citronella stick. That's because I got bitten by bad dengue mosquitoes once bitten, twice shy. This is wonderful. Coincidentally matches the color of my kurta, but tomorrow I will have kurta of another color, but I will still have this citronella stick. So this keeps mosquitoes away. This is no other smoke, and it's perfectly legal.